Lesson 4. Know how you and others may react in a crisis. Are you sometimes surprised or shocked by the way someone behaves towards you, or by your behaviour towards them, especially in a crisis? Do you know how and why you behave as you do in situations of conflict? Do you understand why other people react and behave as they do? Understanding yourself and knowing how you react in a conflict can help you to be more in control of your behaviour. It can also help you to understand how and why others may react and behave as they do. Let's skip back to the book again. In the book, we join Joe Smith, who faces the prospect of losing control of his own company following a vote of no confidence. Joe reacts angrily, vowing to fight back in an attempt to oust the five directors who've been plotting against him. Then we find Joe at home with his wife, who is avoiding dealing with the growing conflict with her husband, prompted by the stress he is under at work. Our instinctive reaction to conflict is to see it as a threat and to fight, flee, freeze, or appease. Once we understand this, we can take time to ask ourselves questions about the situation and use our whole brain to consciously decide what the best response would be. So why on earth do we allow ourselves to respond in such a negative way? Let's have a quick science lesson. There's a primitive part of our brain called the amygdala. It's a small almond-shaped part of the brain located just above the ear on either side. Now, the amygdala reacts to the perception of threat, physical or social. So it may react to a dog attempting to attack you, but it will also act in response to a verbal put-down. Don't forget, it's the perception that matters, not what is actually happening. In other words, if because of something you have seen or experienced in the past, your brain believes that you are under threat, it will automatically switch into this emergency mode. Part of the problem is that the amygdala, in effect, hijacks the logical thinking part of the brain because it acts much more quickly. But the only answer it can provide us with are these: fight, flee, freeze, or appease. Any conflict, that is anything that threatens our needs and interests, our values, attitudes, and beliefs, is reacted to as if it were an immediate threat to our survival. So, how do you react? What is your preferred response in a crisis? Here's an exercise. Think back to the last time that you were in a situation where your instinctive reaction to conflict snapped into play. What did you do? Did you fight? Did you use physical or verbal aggression towards another person? Did you flee? Did you storm off or walk out from the situation? Did you freeze? Did you react as though nothing had happened? Or did you appease? Did you try to stop the conflict by offering concessions? Think again about that situation. Were there other factors that may explain yours or others' reaction to the situation? So, for example, perhaps something you've experienced in the past influences the way you react. Or perhaps you were under a lot of stress at the time. But other factors that can affect how we react are things like low blood sugar or lack of sleep. So can we stop the amygdala from hijacking our reaction so that we can respond in a crisis and conflict in a more reasoned way? The answer is definitely yes. It is possible to teach ourselves to have the whole brain working in situations of threat or conflict. First, we have to tell ourselves to stop and think. We have to accept that we first experience as instinctive and not reasoned. Then we should ask ourselves three questions. What's really happening here? Is this a real emergency? What are some of the alternative realities to my original perception? And who else matters and what matters to them? Now, this may seem simple, but it's not easy, because changing the way we naturally respond to difficult people and situations takes time and practice. So it's important to develop your own strategies to overcome the instinctive amygdala response, or amygdala spin, as I call it, to conflict, and to give yourself more time to think. So here's one way to keep calm in particularly stressful, high-pressure situations. One of the things we forget to do when we're in a highly stressful situation is to breathe. Have you ever noticed when you're stressed that you're taking shorter, more rapid breaths? The problem is that without the right balance of oxygen and carbon dioxide, your brain can't think clearly. Rapid breathing can make you feel even more agitated, and in the long term, it can even contribute to other issues such as digestive problems or lowered resistance to infections such as colds and flu. This is why we're often ill at the same time as we're stressed. The best tip to calm you down is to become aware of your breathing and to concentrate on making your breaths calmer and slower. So here's an exercise. The idea is that you practice this at home, and then the next time that you're in a situation where you feel stressed or agitated, you can put this breathing into practice. So, sit somewhere quiet and calm, and tell yourself to stop and slow down. Breathe in slowly through your nose. Then pause for a second or two. Then let the air out slowly. This helps retain carbon dioxide, your natural tranquilizer. So as you exhale, relax the tension in your muscles, especially in your shoulders and face. This is called the calming breath. Practicing the calming breath can also have a knock-on effect on calming those around you. You should practice the calming breath two or three times a day, perhaps on your journey to work or when you first arrive at your desk before you start a busy day. Any time will do, and the more you practice, the easier it's going to be to use the calming breath when you're in a situation that requires it. When was the last time you had a really good laugh? A doctor in India has become so inspired by the idea that laughter really is the best medicine that he organises groups that meet every morning just to laugh. Rather like the calming breath, laughter makes you inhale more oxygen. It helps you to unwind from stress, and it also boosts your immune system. Listen to this group of people laughing. Even making yourself laugh or listening to others laughing can have the same therapeutic effect. And those that meet together for laughter yoga classes, although the group starts with fake laughter, it soon turns to the real thing. Of course, laughing in the middle of a conflict situation may be totally inappropriate, but making the time and the opportunity to laugh more often can only help us to be more relaxed generally and respond to others in a more relaxed way. So why not make more time for laughter in your life? So let's quickly summarise what we've learnt in this lesson. We've learnt that in a conflict situation, the amygdala can hijack your brain's response because it believes you're under attack. That your instinctive response is likely to be to fight, flee, freeze or appease. But that it is possible to train yourself to respond with the whole brain, giving yourself more time to think logically about the situation. And we've learnt that conflict can begin or escalate because instinctive reactions are interpreted or perceived as a further threat, and so the cycle continues. So remember, it's important to develop your own strategies for dealing with difficult situations. Learning calming techniques can help, and so can laughter.